Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. This week's episode is about a bank that has grown from 4 to 27 branches under this week's guest leadership. In the studio today is a guest whose long-term goal is to grow its earnings by 9% annually. Today's Playmakers Bank bases their success of serving the community. With us today is a CEO who says they have done everything they can to build this bank to last another 150 years. This great playmaker is Robert A. Halsey. Robert is president and CEO of American National Bank of Texas. American National Bank of Texas is headquartered in Terrell, Texas. The bank has been named one of the top 100 best places to work by the Dallas Morning News for 14 years. American National Bank of Texas is one of the oldest independently owned banks in Texas, founded in 1875 in Terrell. Robert joined the bank in 1976 and was named president and CEO in 1989. At that time, the bank had four branches and a little less than $200 million in total assets. Today, the bank has 27 branches, $5.4 billion in total assets, and $4.5 billion in deposits. Now, prior to joining American National Bank, Robert was employed by Texas Instruments for 6 years. Well, Robert, thank you very much for being on the show. Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you very much.
Well, I need to ask you about that last remark I mentioned about TI. Your background, you went to UT,
yes,
and your background was a BS in mechanical engineering. Let me ask first, why you got into mechanical engineering? Was that something you were interested in?
I always enjoyed the engineering. I did better in that than I did in English, and so I enjoyed the engineering. I enjoyed math and working for it, and so I decided that I would choose an engineering subject to go into. So I did and completed my engineering degree there at the University of Texas.
Where were you living at the time before you went to Austin? What community were you in?
Oh, I grew up in Terrell. And so, you know, there's many generations of my family that have lived in Terrell. So,
now, were you working at TI in North Dallas, Richardson area?
Well, yes. I worked for three of those years in North Dallas. And then three of the years, TI opened a brand new facility in Lubbock. And so I was one of the first ones of the first group to go out there and begin to start building the franchise that they had out there in Lubbock for a while.
Long way from Terrell.
Yes, my interesting quick little story. I would come home and every day and I'd talk to my wife and I'd say, you know, what do you think about going to France? She said, yeah. What do you think about going to Italy? We got some company over there. We might go there. And so she finally says, she looked at me and said, Robert, I'll go wherever you are, but don't just keep throwing these things at me. Walk in, tell me where we're going, and we'll go. I don't want to hear anything else. I said, oh, yeah, okay. So I walked in and I said, Sherry, need to sit down. We're going someplace. She said, where are we going? I said, to Lubbock. She kind of paused and looked at me and said, what happened to France?
Now, mechanical engineering is a little bit different than the banking business. What caused you to make that transition?
Well, two things. One is I did get an MBA from the University of Pennsylvania at the Wharton Graduate School. And so and I did pretty well in finance and technology and things like that at the time. And so I went in and did, in the TI world, I was more in their control and management area of it, and did a variety of jobs that they had with that. And then I decided that I probably wanted to change careers. And my dad called and said, you want to come work at the bank? And I said, well, I don't know. Let me think about it. So I had always thought that I'd never go into banking. That was what my dream, my thoughts were about that. So I did. And I finally, Sherry and I talked about it. And, you know, always when you're going into a family type business, you have to always say, okay, we're going to have to be mature enough to say, if we don't like it, I'm sorry, but we're going to leave. So we both felt like we could say that. And so we agreed and moved our family to from Lubbock to Terrell.
So back again.
Right.
Back again in the family business.
Right.
You've been with the bank a long time. It's correct me if wrong, you're looking at over 40 years?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
But you're not as old as the bank is. Now, the bank is coming up on 150 years, opening in 1875.
Right.
Tell us about some of the history of the bank, how it started, how it's evolved to where you are right now.
It initially started as three individuals just coming together and having a partnership. And they decided to kind of pool some of their assets, bring in the money, make some loans, and that was the way that the bank actually started. So it was named Corley, Bivens, and Waters for the three people that did that. It sort of traded hands a little bit back and forth among the partners, and finally wound up in the hands of one man. And then he, after his death, the community came together and bought the bank from his estate, and then formed the American National Bank with it, with the board of directors and a normal corporation that you would work with from that.
Approximately what year was that? Was it in the 1900s or still back?
It was in the 1880s.
So not too long after the bank had started.
Yeah, my family actually started. So two of my great grandfathers actually started working in the bank, and they came in the early 1880s. One came, and then he left, and the other one came behind him to work with him.
Now, you've been with the bank since, correct me if I'm wrong, it's 1976, is that correct?
That's correct.
And then in 1989, you became president and CEO.
Correct.
Again, that's a long time for being with one company, not just a bank. But what are some of the changes you've seen within American National Bank since you got here and since you become president?
In banking, obviously, I guess it was like almost every industry. There's been tremendous change that has gone on with that. I would say one of the things that I would, and you mentioned it earlier, one of the things that when I first came in to the bank about a month prior, we had had a survey of our employees, and it surveyed our culture, and it was quite frankly terrible. Wasn't very good at all.
Well, that's very interesting compared to where you are right now, but continue with that. This is interesting.
And so we started measuring it about every 2 years. And then you can't do everything at once. So we'd work on some things, and we'd work on some other things, we'd work on some things, and then our scores kept going up and up for all of that, and so we felt pretty good about it. So and we've obviously had it validated by the 14 years that we've been successful to be named into the top 100. And that's a vote of our employees. It's not some evaluator from the outside. It's a measure of where our employees think the bank is. And that gives me a real sense of pride, because if they think that I feel good about that.
Give us an idea of what you had to do to grow as much as you've grown, which is I can do that correctly, math in my head, it's about a 6 or 7 time increase in where you were.
Two things. One thing I'd say first, luck sometimes plays a very big role in it. So we had some loan troubles in about 79 and 80, and we decided we were not lending money in a prudent way. And we went back and redid all of our systems, redid our stuff. This predates my leadership. It's actually my dad's leadership in that. And so we went back, and then as we went through the 80s, we righted our ship. And by the end of the 80s, 88, 89, we were very profitable, had restored completely our capital of the bank, and were growing. So we were needing to put some capital to work. So when 89 came and a lot of banks were failing during that time period, we had the capital and the earnings to be able to acquire them. So that gave us the impetus of the first of it. And then from there, we acquired some locations that we helped to build on, and kind of started some and work through the whole thing about growing it sort of individually like that. One of the things that I think that I would say our success has been about, one of the factors of it, is that it's really important for us to make sure that when we go into a community, we have a very effective leader to be in that community. Because we started and purchased, and if you don't have the leadership, it doesn't work. And it doesn't matter whether you started it or you bought it. If you have the leadership, it's going to work. And so we've stayed with that. And I remember one of the first ones that we brought in was a man by the name of Larry Parks. And Larry came in to help us run our Rockwall branch that was out of that. And he worked for several years. He was competing against the bank that was really doing a lot of things. They were lending more money than we were. They were paying higher rates on their deposits, and they were on the golf course every day at 1 o'clock. And Larry was there at nights, weekends, working and just building what he could out of that thing. And, you know, as time does, chickens come home to roost, and that bank had made a lot of bad loans. And so when all of that happened, they sort of shrunk down, and Rockwall Banking Center under Larry's leadership just exploded. And when we bought the Rockwall Bank, it was the fourth of four banks in terms of both their position in the community and the amount of their deposits. And a few years after the flip happened, we were twice the size of the nearest competitor.
Well, thinking about what happened during the 80s and a lot of the bank failures, you were one of the few that had the opportunity to buy a lot of those banks too. And I'm guessing there weren't a lot of banks in the position that you were in to do that.
Well, there were enough. There was plenty of stuff to bid. We only had one time where we had no bidders for a branch that we wanted to buy, our Crandall Bank. And we went into the FDIC, and so we sat down with them, and we said, well, where are the other competitors? And they said, well, you're the only one. Okay, so that was a fun negotiation.
I can believe that was. What are your plans for the future? Are you planning on to adding more branches or just building the branches you currently have?
Well, I would say, go back to my earlier statement. If there are lots of places we would like to put in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. That's all we are. We're not outside of Dallas-Fort Worth because we think there's just so much opportunity there in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Just to give you an example, we've done some mapping around our banking centers, around our current banking centers as they exist, and there are 150,000 businesses around those banking centers, and we bank 15,000 of them. So we have a 10x opportunity to grow our business just from where we are. However, there are also a lot of places we would like to be, but we won't go to those places if we don't have the leadership. So we're sitting around and we're saying, yeah, we'd like to be there. We'd like to be there. You know, we don't have someone yet ready to go into that spot, so we don't go there.
I'm listening to you as you're speaking. You're talking about leadership. It seems like the people that are running your branches almost act like they own that bank. So they take care of it so well, mm-hmm. they build it up. Would you agree with that statement?
Oh, yes, very much. They have their P&L statement, you know, and they have authorities to do what they need to do with that. And so I think there's a lot. You know, we have an ESOP, and it's a pretty strong ESOP for our employees. So they, I believe, act like owners and are owners, and so it's a good relationship with that.
Well, as an employee-owned company, I can see why your people want to stay with you. They're they're protecting their assets too,
right,
by every good thing they do for their customers.
Right.
Now, one of the things I mentioned at the very beginning was that you have a long-term goal to grow earnings by 9% annually. Is there any special way that you're doing that?
Well, let me be clear. What we say is that we want to build a bank that can provide earnings of 9% consistently. Now, any one year, we may not do that, and in some years, we'll do a lot more than that. So, but we want to provide the, and so we think about our organization that we do that, and then we base it on what we call four pillars. That we want to be the business bank of choice. We want to have very up-to-date and high-quality digital experience 24/7 for people to be able to bank the way they want to bank with it. We want to have the infrastructure that we think we need to be able to do that, and we need to be able to manage and use our data well so that that can compete. So it takes all four of those pillars to be able to build what we think would be ultimately a bank that has a consistently high earning level of profits.
You must have a fascinating computer system with and programmer for everything done with the 27 branches and doing as well as you're doing, and you must have some very good people running that for you.
Well, I will tell you this too. When we came out of 08 and 09, which was a tough year for a lot of banks, it was pretty that went through that, and we had probably slowed down our technology spending. So when we came out of that recession, we were actually behind the curve on technology. And I looked up and I said, look, we got to spend a lot of money on technology. If we're going to be in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, we can't have second-class digital. We got to be get up there. So I started talking about a number that blew the director's mind away, and we have great directors. They're great, and I appreciate them every day that they do for what they. What happened as they began to look at it and they thought about it? If I'm going to come to them and ask them for a $5 million spend on technology, they don't really know much about it. They're just going to look at it and say, "Well, whatever you think." Well, that's not the kind of input that I need to make sure we're making a good decision. Because one of my points said, we can spend the money, but we can't spend it twice. We're not strong enough. We're not big enough to spend that money twice. So we went out and actually recruited three really high-tech people to be on our board. And we had some help with it. And we thought they might be with us for about 3 years and move on. They're still with us today. They're as active as ever. They always complain to me, so they've never worked harder and been paid less. But in any case, they were all come from the technology, different aspects of it. Some, a couple of them had owned technology businesses, built them up, sold them. One was the CTO of VRBO, the company out of that. Another had been the chief marketing officer for Rackspace, and the other was a CIO for a large insurance company out of that. So, they could argue computers from any aspect that you want to do, and they'd argue strategy, and they'd argue marketing strategy in a technology world. And so it's they have been incredibly helpful to us. But, going back to the fact about leaders, one of the greatest things that I got to witness is that when we brought in those new directors, the old directors welcomed them. They'd been a clique for many, many years together, and yet they saw the need and liked these people and did it. And in the same way, the new ones respected the old ones for what they knew about banking and how banking ought to work. And so I have just been blown away at how well they intermesh together and how much it's affected us. We've changed the way we do project management. We've changed the way that we look at stuff. We've moved our technology from where it was to, I think we're doing some things that are a little out there. And I'm very pleased with where we are and the type of our technology. I'll tell you this too. We had we changed out our online mobile, which is where most people interact with the bank through it. And at the time, we were about 2.5 on the iPad, on the iPhone app store. And we put in the new system. Then the computer company that we were with upgraded that system after some research with it. And now we're scoring right around 5, and we have over 5,000 raters on our app site. So I think we're making some difference.
That's amazing to be able to carry American National Bank in your pocket. You have an unusual board because you have people that really understand technology. That must be a lot different from other banks.
Well, honestly, yes, it very much is. I would say I, of course, I don't know everybody's board, so I can't. But my sense is, I think we have one of the strongest technology boards of a bank even near our size. And I've heard some very large banks that I don't believe have that kind of technology on the board to help them make those decisions.
That's almost half of your board understands technology.
It's about a third. So we have a large board, but their voice is well known. So, and they hold us accountable. They're not just advising on stuff. They're like, okay, have you met your KPIs? What's going on here? Why are you not, you seem like this is slowing down. Why is it not, it should be in place? Because they come from the technology. I mean, they, bam, 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 they expect it to move on. And so that's what they've done. And they've really helped change our bank more than just the technology side of it.
Well, you mentioned leadership. We talked about customer service. You have been best in banks 2020, and only 2.8% of all banks have received that, I understand, and only 5 in Texas. Now, you basically in this interview have been telling us why that's happened, but is there anything else that you've done to make you one of the best banks in the nation and in Texas?
Oh, it was quite an honor. I was, we were pretty excited when that happened for us. And so I would say, as you said, it all starts with the people. And we did a survey earlier on when we were trying to move our technology up, and one of the surveys came back and probably paraphrased it as well as I think you could possibly, said, "We love your people, so we put up with your processes." So it starts, and it doesn't end with people, but it starts, and it's motivated by how your people feel about what when they walk into the bank, how they're treated and how they out of it, and whether or not they feel like they're talking to somebody that has knowledge. And the other thing that a community bank has that a lot of times a larger bank does, we don't tend to move people around, so they get to know the people in a bank. There's probably more turnover than we ever used to have a long time, several years ago, but at the same time there's still some consistency there that I don't think you really get at some of the other banks. Of the larger banks, excuse me.
How would any listener get a hold of you or your bank to find out more about American National Bank?
We have a website, anbtx.com. Love for you to visit and see what you think about that. We just redesigned it, and I think last year, a year and a half ago, that we put a new website out there, and it seems to be doing very well. Our technology board members were just blasting us about our old website and our old online mobile and just giving us bloody. And so we got through with it and did all that to it, and they were very pleased and excited about what we had done. So I felt like we were making very good progress there with being able to do that. But those, I think their input, I'd say one of the things that's been so effective for us is going from more of a linear old project management system to doing a very much an agile system and working in that. And for a community bank, we were really pretty early on finding dedicated project 1 year what our organizational roadmap was going to be, and we had 7 items on this. And I showed it to them after that, and one of the technology persons said, "What makes you think you can do that? You hadn't accomplished one of those projects in a year now, and why do you think you can get 7 of them done this year?" I said, "Well, I just think we can. I think we're organized better to do that." And she said, okay. So in October of that year, we had accomplished all 7 and on time, pretty much on budget, but enough about that. So when I told them, "I want you to know all 7 projects have been accomplished pretty much on time and pretty much on budget," there was a great in the room. So, I felt really good about that.
I do encourage everybody to go to the website. That's ANBTX, bankers.com. This has been a terrific show. We just spoke, as I mentioned, with Robert Halsey. Robert is President and CEO of American National Bank of Texas. Again, thank you, Robert, for being a great guest. It's been great having you on the show, and thank you to all of you for listening and joining us. Remember, help to control our pet population. Let's have all of our pets spayed or neutered. And to adopt a pet, you might want to check with StrayDog.com, especially if you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we'll be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.